the interwebs. It is a Wednesday, 9:29 p.m. on the Eastern Standard Time, and it is time for the Monkey Sweating Robots podcast. I'm a day late and dollar short. I apologize. Do not get food poisoning. That is a horrible, horrible, horrible thing to wish upon your enemy, and I do not wish that upon anyone. Well, maybe one person, like Donald Trump. Like, he can get food poisoning all the time. Oh, man. I'm Matt Sardo, Monkey Sweating Robots. Podcast time! Whew. Still recovering from New York Comic Con. Lots of good stuff. Our beat reporter, friend, colleague, Roger Riddell, was up there, and he spoke with the showrunner of Daredevil for Season 3, Eric Olson. He did a roundtable, and that is going to be the bulk of the interview today for you guys. I'm very excited about that. I actually got to see the first 6 episodes of Daredevil Season 3. And after watching the first episode, you immediately understand why Iron Fist got canceled. Because it is horrible compared to Daredevil. Daredevil is so good. The fight scenes are so good. Just the character development is so good. The cinematography, the dialogue, the scripts, the setting, where he is, the type of character. I really like Iron Fist. I like him a lot. Oh, man, I gotta adjust my seat here. I don't know what's going on. I almost fell down. But I really like Iron Fist as a character. I thought that Ed Brubaker and Matt Fraction reinvented the character. Even though it only lasted for like 23 issues. But like, it was a great character. He's a great character. And there's tons that you can do with him. I understand that he's ripped off of kind of like, I don't know, he ripped off of a Batman / Iron Man / Doctor Strange. I don't know if you're ripped off of Doctor Strange, but I mean, like, he's a mashup of like 3 characters, because he's like the rich playboy, parents got killed, special training, you know, kung fu master. I mean, the kung fu was late 60s, early 70s. I mean, that was the shit. But man, it's kind of disappointing that Iron Fist got canceled, because I felt like it was trying to find its way. But I guess if you're forking out the money like Netflix is, you're like, listen, you really need to find your way. Series 1 and then Series 2, where we just hit the ball running. Hit the ground running. Not hit the ball running. I don't know. Can you? You can hit the ball running. I mean, it's something you can do. Today's episode is sponsored by water. Lots and lots of water. That's what this episode is sponsored by. Whew. Man, I lost 24 hours of my life. Just don't get sick, people. Don't get sick. Whew. Like, 'cause 2 weeks ago with the twins and Alice, like, the whole family got sick and we got wiped out for a week and a half. Finally recover. I go to Ferg's on Sunday to watch the Bears destroy the Dolphins. And they don't destroy the Dolphins. They shit the bed. And then I was like, okay, we're going to hit this week hard. We're going to do it well. And I was like, I watched The Rookie, which is really good, which I liked. It got bashed by Deadline. So I guess you watch it and you tell me what you think it is. I mean, definitely it's, I wouldn't say it's millennial versus Gen X, but like, it is definitely more for Gen X than it is for millennial. I think, I don't know, the millennial characters in it, but The Rookie, give it a shot. Nathan Fillion, our Gen X Moses. I think that he's going to lead us to the promised land one of these days. Could be. I don't know. And I was like writing my review, and then like 12:30 hits, and I was like, shit, I don't feel good. And then 3 o'clock hits, food poisoning. Whew. And I had a few blue moons that night leading up to it. I'm not gonna be drinking blue moon for like another 5 years now. There's still like 4 left in the fridge. And they are gonna sit there for a very long time. And then the next 24 hours was destroyed. I didn't even read comic books yet. I didn't read comic books yet. It's 9:33 on a Wednesday, and I have yet to read comic books. But I was like, I'm going to get this podcast up by midnight on Wednesday, because I want to get you a podcast every Wednesday. That's my goal, preferably Tuesday night. But I want you to get a podcast every Wednesday. That is the Matt Sardo non-food poisoning guarantee. And especially since we have these laid out and I have a few interviews that are already in the bag waiting for you guys. I just want, you know, I should just be like teeing up some comic books, teeing up some reviews, and then, it's all yours. But going back to Daredevil, the first six episodes are just brilliant. I mean, everybody knows that they're introducing Bullseye in the series. So I don't want to ruin it for you when I say Bullseye, but like, just so you know that like they've already announced that Bullseye is going to be in it. So if you don't want spoilers, you know, I would kind of like walk away now. But like, my review is sitting on Monkeys Fighting Robots right now, and I break down each episode and I kind of like break it down by director, because I think the cinematography and the way the different episodes were laid out, like, it's just primo what they did. I mean, it's just such a drastic change from Iron Fist and Luke Cage. And I think Iron Fist and Luke Cage will do really well if they're together. Like, just put those two guys together, and I think you'll have like a really good like yin and yang, where you can actually have like some really, really solid social commentary and write some amazing dialogue between those two guys. All right, time for our water break. So my hopes is that there isn't a Luke Cage season 3. Well, there has to be now, because the way they wrote the story, I don't know. They could just be leaving shit everywhere now. And then just like, whatever, you know, we'll just go to Freeform or Disney's doing whatever Disney does. And then I'll be like, God damn it, I don't want to spend more money. It's going to be rough. But Daredevil is broken when you get to the first episode, and it is brilliant. You know, the first couple frames, I think the first, I don't want to say first frames, but I want to say the first 5 minutes is ripped straight out of a comic. Like, I've seen so many superheroes in the same pose that Daredevil is in the beginning of the book, the beginning of the episode, and it is just awesome. And then our hero is broken, and nobody likes it better than like when a hero has to rise up from the broken ashes and, you know, kick some butt, you know. But it's Daredevil, so he's going to get like, I feel like Daredevil has it worse than Spider-Man. Spider-Man is like, it's like, hey, I'm happy-go-lucky, but my whole entire world's going to suck, but I'm going to continue to be happy-go-lucky. Do-do-do, Spider-Man, woo! But like, Peter Parker really does have some depressing shit going on in his life. But then like, as happy-go-lucky as Spider-Man is, they're like, yeah, Daredevil is not going to get that at all. We're going to put Catholic guilt on him, and we're going to do the whole religious thing, and it's just going to be epic for epic tales. Said our epic tale's sake. Whew. And man, this is where we are in the solid meat and potatoes of Catholic guilt with season 3, and it is just, it grabs a hold of me, man. Like, it gets me good. I love it so much. And the fight choreography, I hate to compare it to Iron Fist, because Iron Fist is supposed to be a kung fu master, but Iron Fist fucking sucks at fighting. He's just horrible. But like, Daredevil, like, He's got the boxing side that they kicked in for season 3, where I'm like, oh man, this is what I want to see. You know, Battle and Jack Madrock. And then you got Matt, like a little boxer. Oh man, it's so good. And watching him box and watching him like maneuver through it. And I think that episode 4 tops the hallway fight scene from season 1. Episode 4 has a battle in there where Matt Murdock has to battle his way out of a tough situation in a prison, and the way it's filmed and what they put him through, I'm like, oh my God, this is one of the best episodes of television I've watched. It totally reminded me of True Detective when, not Matt Douglas, Matthew Broderick, Matthew Damon, Matt Damon, Johnny Damon, Matthew McConaughey battles his way out of the hood in that one episode of season 1, and it's just a gun blazing awesome time. And that's what this reminds me of. It was so good, and it just, oh, it got me super excited for everything that's going to come after that. And episode 4 just peaked, and then episode 5 takes a super downer. Like, it's like, hey, we were at 11 on episode 4, we're going to take it down to like a solid 6, but it's a great episode. It's almost like a stage play, episode 5, and then, I don't even remember episode 4. So yeah, 4 is insane, 5 is stage play, 6 is the last episode I saw, and they're like, hey, remember how much fun you had in episode 4? We're going to have twice as much fun in episode 6, and I was like, holy shit, you can't do this to me. This is going to be hard. This is going to be brutal. You can't just... Heart attack, you know, I'm taking some baby aspirin. I got the defibrillators ready. Like, it's just like heart attack on a platter, episode 6. It is just, Oh, it is. As my editor-in-chief couldn't stand when I said it in a live video, it is muy, muy bonita. That would be very pretty, for those who don't understand my Spanish. But no, it's cinematically, and cinematography is beautiful and pretty and six. And I think the dialogue is spot on, but it is gut-wrenchingly like in your face, like no holds bar, like, oh, look, this is an R-rated show I'm watching. And I just remembered that at the last second, because it is insane. It is a bloodbath. Like I was really worried. I'm still worried. I'm really worried about a few main characters not making it out of this season, because they're just the way they're building up people. I'm like, no, this is foreshadowing. It's like reverse foreshadowing. Oh man. But we got the showrunner of Daredevil, Eric Olsen, on. He sat in a roundtable interview with Roger Riddell, Monkeys Fighting Robots, and a few other compatriots of the pop culture journalism world. And I think some Comicsverse reporter was in there as well. But he shed some light on season 3, which comes out this Friday. I'd recommend binging it. I know that I am going to lay into that thing heavily on Friday, being like, okay, people, I need to know what's going on stat, and I need closure, and I need to know where I'm going. But I'm also going to be sad, because I'm like, no, because you get it, watching a 9-hour movie in one day, you're like, oh, that was a whole series. And you kind of feel like you should be like watching it for like 3 months, but no, you get it in one day and your brain's fried. And you're like, oh, I want another 9-hour movie. Like, no. Why aren't they making me another 9-hour movie? God, Netflix, how come you can't microwave my films in 30 seconds or less? They got me spoiled. Oh, geez, Jesus Christ. I'm just losing it here, people. No, but what I want you to do is I want you to listen to the conversation with Eric Olsen, and I want you to watch Daredevil Season 3. Check out my review, because it's one long review, but I go episode by episode and highlight the directors and stuff, and check it out, and give me your feedback on what you thought, your response was to Daredevil. And when you compare it to like Iron Fist, where you're going to cancel it right away. I mean, when the bar is set so high and then you get Iron Fist, you're like, oh shit, Jesus Christ, people, what's going on? Wow. But I'm Matt Sardo. This is Monkeys Fighting Robots. We got an Instagram handle. We got some YouTube channel. We got a YouTube channel. We got a Twitter, Facebook. We got that Facebook thing over there. I don't trust those Facebook people now. They used to be so good to me in 2004, I think. Oh, man, they have so much of my data. Facebook has so much of my data. But I want to hear the conversation from you. So if you liked Iron Fist, tell me you liked Iron Fist. I mean, I want to love it. I want to love it. But if you love Daredevil, tell me you love Daredevil. If you don't like it, Daredevil. You know what's funny? I don't even talk about Vincent D'Onofrio at all. Even that movie. And he's in it all the time. You're like, oh my God, it's Vincent D'Onofrio. Like, he's crazy. Like, he's crazier than me, I think. He was the best part of that Magnificent Seven reboot. I don't even know what his character was. I just know he was like a human bear. It's just that can't human bear who, like, I don't know, did he bite somebody's ear off? And I could see him biting. I could see him biting everybody. Like, he should have been in that Quentin Tarantino movie. Like, where that was that Western. And, like, he should have eaten somebody or something like that. I don't know, but it was insane, my friend, how good Vincent D'Onofrio is as the Kingpin. Because now he owns that shit. Like, he is the fucking Kingpin. Whew. All right, I've led up to this interview with showrunner Eric Olsen of Daredevil. Check it out. Listen to the questions. Give me some feedback. Give us some critiques, man. Tell us what you would have wanted us to ask in that roundtable interview. It starts off a little rough because everybody's shuffling their mics around, but it's a good interview. Thanks for taking the time to listen to the podcast. I thoroughly apologize that we are 24 hours behind the schedule, but enjoy the interview. Enjoy Daredevil. Have a great weekend. I will be back next Wednesday. Monkeys Fighting Robots, Matt Sardo. Love you guys.
Ed Gross Geek Magazine, and I think that's like a
YouTube as well. So nice to meet you, sir.
Thank you. You too.
from Roger Riddell with Monkeys Fighting Robots.
Want me to shove these down?
Awesome, awesome.
I say from Comicsverse.
Okay, cool. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
Kurt Anthony Krug. I'm with the Oakland Press in Detroit.
Oh, pleasure, sir.
And you, sir.
Do you want that pushed down?
Oh, all right. And I'm Eric Olson.
Oh, really?
Pleasure to meet you.
Thanks for doing this.
Sure,
thank you. Mind if I lead off, gentlemen and lady? Okay, you know, in every comic book, it seems, with Daredevil, when a creative team leaves, it's a tradition to put him in a bad place. He's in jail. He's beaten within an inch of his life. I see you're doing that with this show, because when we see him at the end of The Defenders, he's beaten within an inch of his life and presumed dead.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, there were events that I had to honor. And one of the things that I very much wanted to do was to tell an emotionally honest story. My approach to storytelling is very much to tell stories from the inside, like what is the character's inner life, and to take the audience into the shoes of the character and then experience the story as opposed to watch it from the outside. That was something that Charlie Cox and I and Jeff Loeb and I and everybody got very excited about at the beginning of the season, was to kind of pick up the events of the past season and of Defenders, and then be honest about where the story would go from there. So we kick off the season with Matt Murdock smashed emotionally, smashed physically, and smashed spiritually. So in terms of the pattern of things, we start him off in that very low point before it moves on to greener pastures. So.
Well, I was going to say, what is his journey this season? I mean, every season you think the character is going to be on a journey, some sort of evolution. In your mind, I'm not asking story spoilers per se, but what is Matt's journey this year?
Well, the guiding principle of the season was one that I actually put up on the writer's room wall, which was you can only be free when you confront your fears, because your fears are what enslave you. And it took us a while to kind of land on that, but that became the guiding principle for all of the storylines. Every character on this show this season is dealing with a fear of some kind, and that includes the so-called man without fear, who actually does have something that he's afraid of, even if he's not fully conscious of that. And so Matt's emotional journey this season is to come to terms with something that he fears that he's not aware of, and that fuels a lot of his behavior, and has in past seasons as well.
Cool. Good answer.
So with that focus on fear within each of the characters, including Matt himself, what was the most difficult aspect to develop with the characters and the storylines in regard to their fears?
Well, it's funny, because fear is such a universal thing in all of us, and I feel like a lot of us behave in the world in certain ways because of our fears. We may vote a certain way because of things that we fear. We might treat other people in a certain way because of the way we fear. We may take on life missions because we're afraid of something, or we're afraid of failing someone, or we're afraid that we're not worthy of love, or we're there's many different fears, that. When you look at kind of the ensemble of characters that we have, that gave me a real touchstone for a thematic unity and the ability to go deeper on stuff. Wilson Fisk is afraid of something too, you know. So like I believe that the villains of the world also act out of fear, even if they're a narcissistic would-be tyrant who uses people's fears to turn them against one another and gain power. So that is something that I try to weave into the narrative.
This is kind of a villain heavy season, because obviously you bring back Wilson Fisk and you're telling the origin story of a new villain. So how does how early was that laid out when you first started, when you were first approached for the job?
Well, when I walked in the door, Marvel had a number of ideas of what they thought season three might contain. They pitched me a lot of things. They said, it's your show, but here are some ideas we were thinking about. Certainly the return of Fisk was a major piece of the puzzle that they were very eager to use. And similarly, they gave me the option of introducing this major villain from the Daredevil pantheon, but it wasn't like, they didn't hand me the story or anything like that. They're like, here are some of the toys that you can play with if you want to. And I, of course, being a fan of the show and of the comics, said, oh, goody. You know, kind of cackled evilly, and I went away to my writing cave, and I came back with a pitch for how I was going to structure the season, and they got extremely excited about that, and that's the show, basically, that you guys are all going to watch. I came up with kind of the structure and the bones of it all, and then had a very talented team of writers helping me flesh it out. And Marvel was my partner every step of the way. So, I would say that I wanted to treat Fisk like a spy master, somebody who was a operational thinker. And that's actually a term out of the intelligence community. And I grew up around that world. My father worked for the Defense Intelligence Agency, and I know a lot about real-life tradecraft and real-life intelligence techniques. And I wanted to give Fisk that skill set so that when he came back, he wasn't just the criminal kingpin. He was somebody who was an expert at manipulation. And an expert at creating the conditions for certain things to happen around him without leaving his fingerprints on anything. Kind of that, it's basically, in the IC they call it the dark arts. And I employ the dark arts a lot with Fisk. Now, that said, there needed to be a physical threat to Matt. It is Daredevil, we've seen, you know, physical confrontations between Fisk and Daredevil in the past, and we wanted it to be something else. And there was this opportunity to bring in this other major villain. I was extremely excited about it, but I gravitated towards an origin story for that villain. And one of the things that I look at as good writing is kind of deep layered, emotionally honest writing. I was aiming, when I said, I came in for my initial pitch, I said, I want to aim for season one of the show meets The Sopranos. And what I meant by that was, I didn't want to have any sidekick characters. I don't believe in sidekick characters. I believe that everybody is the hero of their own story. And I wanted to fully flesh out Karen. I wanted to fully flesh out Foggy. I wanted to make everybody so necessary to the ultimate climax of the season that if you pulled any one of those characters out, the whole thing would collapse. So that was my goal going in.
And this is a show that's changed showrunners.
Yes.
Like, I think every season, right?
Yeah.
It's changed. What is the virtue of that? Because, you know, usually when you get a show, you have a showrunner and he trying to kind of stays with the show,
right,
and carries it,
right,
through. So in your mind, what's the virtue of changing showrunners every season?
Well, I think part of the trick is in these long television seasons, right, and then long periods in between television seasons, is working showrunners, working writers, get other job offers. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to sit around for 6 months or 8 months and not work while other opportunities are floating by and you're waiting for the show to come back. So I think part of that is driven by the new economic model of the way that it all comes down. What I can say is that I met on season one, I met with Drew Goddard to potentially come on the show, and I've been kicking myself ever since that I didn't do that. I got this other bite at the apple and I leapt at it. And I wanted to look at season three kind of like it was my run of the comic, like in the way that Miller had his, or Bendis had his, or Kevin Smith had his. It was like I wanted to honor what came before, and all of that is true and it has happened in the past of the show, but I very much wanted to say, like, okay, I'm going to make this one my tone, my own, and in the way that I want to tell it. Of course, partnering with Marvel, and they were incredibly supportive of the way that I approach storytelling. Bless you. And the way that that we ended up doing it, and they really, it was kind of they handed me the keys to the Ferrari and like let me just take it out, and I kept checking over my shoulder to see if the state police were on my ass, but no, I kept flooring it. And I didn't wrap it around a telephone pole, so hopefully they'll let me do it again, you know.
So one of the big topics of conversation leading up to this season has been that it would be kind of influenced to an extent by the Born Again storyline. But when you're working with source material of any type like that, what are some of the biggest challenges for you in adapting that to this format, either in terms of tone or with even elements of source material that might not work as well today culturally as it worked back then?
Right. Very good question. Season 3 is an original story which draws upon a number of the comic runs. It's not just one or the other. The goal is to give comic book fans what they want, but not in the way they expect it. I also had to honor the version, for instance, of who Karen is on the show, not the version of Karen, the drug addicted, like a very different version of Karen Page in the comics. And so it's its own animal. It's its own, as Jeff Loeb would say, it's its own art form. That said, we are all geeks, and we are all looking for the opportunities to honor the comics and give homages to the comics. So if you are not necessarily a comic fan, you'll watch the show, and hopefully you'll think, this is just awesome. But if you are a fan of the comics and have memorized every panel, you're going to be like, oh my God, they used that panel from blah, blah, blah. And oh, that's straight out of that other panel. Oh my God, your head will pop off. So there are a lot of hidden Easter eggs for fans, which hopefully will tickle their fan funny bone. And if your grandmother who is watching and saying, this show is too violent, but actually gets through it, she'll be like, oh, okay, that was an awesome show. whether or not she's ever read a comic book in her life.
So speaking of Karen, we saw her explore her own distinct arc with the Punisher, which was pretty exciting.
Yes.
To hear, kind of distinguished from her relationships and experiences in Daredevil. So where do we find her in the beginning of season 3?
Well, we find her in the beginning of season 3. A building has fallen on Matt. He hasn't been seen or heard from in some time, and Foggy's convinced that he's dead. Karen knows rationally that he's dead, but she feels in her bones like he might still be out there. She just has this sixth sense about the fact that Matt may still be alive, and yet is dealing with that. That said, Foggy and Karen both will discover in the first few episodes that Fisk is getting out, and determine that they need to do something to stop him on their own without Matt, because they don't believe Matt or Daredevil still exist. And so that kind of kicks off their own very strong moves, their own storylines, which play a major role in the season. I really wanted to have a season, like I said, where had Foggy not done what Foggy does, had Karen not done what Karen does, the story would have turned out very, very differently. They're not just there as a sounding board or a sidekick. I don't believe in that kind of storytelling.
Eric,
I'm so sorry. Is there any water or anything? Yeah. Could we get two of them? He's dying over here, and I'd love to have one, too.
I'm really sorry for that.
No deaths at the junket.
Ed's allergic to me. That's what it is, because I'm here.
Thanks,
it's a sinus infection. It's just
Where'd you go to college, Eric?
I went to NYU Film School.
NYU, okay. And
yeah, Damon Lindelof and I were college roommates, or classmates, not roommates.
And you're from New York originally?
No, I grew up in Northern Virginia. My dad was working either at the Pentagon or at Langley for most of my childhood, so I was a Fairfax County kid.
Okay. And now, join Wally and Leslie Ann Down.
Warren. Yeah.
I always confuse the two. Are joining the cast. Can you talk about them joining the cast and the characters?
Well, Joanne plays the role of Sister Maggie, Maggie Grace, if you are a fan of the comics, you know where that is going. I am not saying who she is or is not. She is a hard scrabble, Hell's Kitchen born and bred nun. Mm-hmm. And Joanne just kicks ass in the role. She's got such gravitas. She's
Willow.
She yeah. Me too. I was like, wait, I get to work with
Jonathan.
Yeah, I was like, there we go. It was that. Yes, I was a big fan of Willow too. Although they told me, don't mention Willow. And I was like, okay, I don't know why. I love Willow. So
she met her now ex-husband out, I guess.
All right, moving on.
Yeah.
She brings a moral compass, a spiritual compass, and her own secrets and fears to the season. I want every character on the show to be fleshed out. That's what I admire about all my favorite TV shows. Like, name one like underbaked character on The Sopranos or on you know. I won't list all the competition because I'll get in trouble for that.
And Leslie?
Leslie Ann Warren is an Oscar winner. She's fantastic. I don't want to spoil the role that she plays. But it was very exciting when we got her to come in and she has a very moving and emotionally rich story. And I don't want to spoil who she interacts with. But we were Jeff Loeb and I were like, seriously, we can get Leslie Moore? All right, done. So I think people will really dig what she's in.
Sweet.
There's the season is paced. I've seen 6 episodes and it's very deliberately paced and it kind of has that crime show feel that you keep mentioning the Sopranos. But you break the tension with 2 really exceptional, spectacular action sequences. How involved were you as a showrunner in kind of crafting those? Because they're next level even by this show's fight history.
Wow, can I frame that in my office and put that on my office wall as a quote? That's pretty awesome. Thank you. Well, I have my finger in every single pot, I guess is the best. As showrunner, I'm intimately involved in every single decision on the show. Oh, thanks, man. Credit where credit was due. There was a whole team of people involved in every single one of them. But let me back up for a second. The hallway fight in season one was an amazing piece of work. And every season of Daredevil has aspired to kind of to one-up it, I should say. As Charlie Cox would say, the stairwell sequence in season 2 was more of an homage to the hallway fight. But in this season, our goal was to actually go far beyond what that hallway fight was. And I'm not sure about my spoiler. Can we talk about the hallway?
I'm holding anything spoilery. I'm going to hold until after release. So
for now, so actually.
Okay, so sorry, man. I'm like, my brain's been blown across the line. It's over.
Just my water first.
I am sitting over a pit of Marvel spikes. So we had ambitions to do something really spectacular this season, and one of the directors, the stunt team, proposed an insanely ambitious sequence, which required me to essentially tell the crew to stop filming so that they could rehearse an entire day on the clock just to be able to pull off a sequence, which anybody who knows television production and the costs associated with it, it was an insanely ambitious idea. And there were no guarantees that it would work, but it did. And it did spectacularly. And it is honestly the sequence I am most proud of in my entire career after doing more than a dozen television series. Charlie Cox will tell you it was probably the most rewarding action sequence he has ever experienced in his career. It was something truly spectacular involving every member of the crew having to be in complete sync for a one-shot action sequence that has no hidden cuts. There are no hidden cuts in it. It is a true one-er. And that's something I really want everybody to know. There were moments inside of it where we built in safety hinges, like darkened spaces where I could have hidden an editorial cut if I wanted to, or done a VFX to stitch two different takes together. We didn't. The fact that the crew pulled it off, it was important to me. Even in post-production, I went in and I lightened the darkened portions so that the audience could see and appreciate that I never actually hit a cut in there. And so it is something that hopefully people will be talking about. The truth of the matter is, to go back to your original question of how involved was I was very involved, but it's a team. Like, running a show is, it's basically you are the prime minister of a very strong-willed cabinet of ministers, all of whom have opinions. Yes, you get the final vote, but I like show running by the team approach as opposed to the dictatorial approach. And what that allows me to do is get the best out of everybody on the cast and the crew. And everybody looks forward to going to work as opposed to feeling like they're grumbling going to work. And as a result, I think we all had a terrific amount of fun this season. Everybody's in extremely high spirits, and we all have ownership of the season. We all feel like we brought our best work to the show, and that's what made it so good, if you guys agree. That's how we feel, so hopefully you will too.
This is a show you would like to stick around for? I mean, if you have the opportunity,
yes.
You want to come back again as show runner?
Yes.
Break the record. And
just Yes. I can't talk about that officially, but yes. Sean's like already standing up. He's like pacing. He's like.
We have time for one more question, guys.
Unless I can defer to you because I don't want to dominate this.
Okay. Oh boy. So. Can you talk a little bit about your father? You said that you grew up around a lot of spy trade. He works for DOD.
Yeah. My dad was Peter C. Olson, and he just wrote a book which is on Amazon. He and Robert Gates, the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency and Secretary of Defense, have a book out. It's called Guide to the Studies of Intelligence. My dad edited it. It's basically how the intelligence community works. My dad spent all of my childhood in and around DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, CIA, the Department of Defense. He became a professor of intelligence at the University of Maryland. Like, that has been his whole thing. And of course, growing up around that, I ended up learning quite a lot and making a lot of friends in that business. I had the opportunity to go that direction, but I got bit by the Hollywood bug too early on in my life. And so instead of being a dark arts warrior on the front lines of our country, I'm a Hollywood cream puff writing television.
What a great closing. Yeah.
Great.